You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat DeVille. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry. How are you?
I'm good, Pat. How are you?
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How's it going?
Excellent. Can't complain.
Yeah, that's good.
It's actually been quite a while now.
It has. I've been off for 2 weeks, so I mean, yeah, it was kind of crazy running around and whatnot with the family and everything, but otherwise it is very, very nice, very somewhat relaxed, and I enjoyed it a great deal.
That's good. That's good. You know, we were going to get together. Was it last week?
Yeah, we were going to try to.
Yeah. But it didn't work out.
No. It was the 18th, right? Wasn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So before Christmas, actually.
Yep.
And it didn't work out. So, but we're here now, and this is the first show of the year.
Yep.
We're psyched. You know, it's 2010. You know, Happy New Year, everybody. And Santa was very generous to you.
Yes, it was. It was a very geeky Christmas, I'll say that.
What'd you get?
Oh, I got a bunch of that. I built an Ion box. So what I basically do is if I know I want to build something, I farm out those specific components to different people in my family and just say, you know, hey, you know, buy this for me, and that's all I really need to do. So
what'd you get? You got a Zotac motherboard?
I built a Zotac Ion box. The case that I got, it's an Antec case. It's slightly bigger than what you had. It actually fits a full slimline DVD in it, as well as two and a half inch hard drives as well. It also, the Zotac board that I bought has a full PCI Express 16 slot on it, as well as mini PCI Express for wireless, and the rest of the same, roughly the same configuration as your board. So the case can handle that as well.
The one I have is the AU. Now, that's a dual core 330.
Mm-hmm.
You got which one?
It was the FE.
FE? Which is a little newer than the one I have.
Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised to see this thing's got four cores on it running as well.
That's so awesome. And now there's also stories that the next generation of Atom NVIDIA combos are coming out.
Oh, already? Yeah. I thought I heard something also about ARM, some new versions of some ARM boards that are coming out as well.
The thing about ARM is it's a different kind of architecture, mm-hmm. so you have to go to a different, completely different source.
Yeah.
Now, I know Ubuntu has, in parallel,
yep.
they have an ARM port,
right.
which supposedly has everything that the XE
right, yeah.
has.
Right.
If that's the case, then it's simple.
It shouldn't be an issue, yeah.
You know, the nice thing about the Zotac ones, the Intel Atom, is it's x86, mm-hmm. and there's nothing... It's just a regular setup,
like right?
Any
yeah,
other machine.
Yeah.
That's what nice. What's really nice about them.
Yep, I like that board a lot. The thing runs really, really nice so far. When I can get it connected, now, that's been the problem.
What are you trying to do, wireless?
I wanted to make it a wireless front end back end combo, but I don't think that's going to work because of this the wireless issues that I'm having with it. I think what I've already done is I'm still waiting for it to come in. Is I bought an Intel mini PCI Express 5500 Wi-Fi link card. That can actually support, they say, you know, on wireless end, up to like 450 megabit connections and whatnot.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, so it should be plenty fine for, plenty fast enough for streaming HD and whatnot. Actually, this is, the 5100 is the one that System76 is using in their Ion, if you want to do the upgrade from whatever board they happen to be using.
That's good. So if they're using it, you know, it's
yeah, and solid. And I figure if they're supporting it, they're going to also be contributing, you know, anything upstream as well. So I'm hoping that will have made it into the you know, Ubuntu 9.10 repos as well. So
you got that going. You mm-hmm. so you're doing a combined back end front end.
I'm gonna start it off as a front end. I did buy a Hopog 1250 card to go into this box. It's a PCI Express 1.0, but that can fit into anything from 1.0 to 16.
Now the Hopog 1250 is you have to compile everything yourself. It's not really supported.
No, it works.
Yeah?
It works fine.
Out of box?
For digital, I mean, digital stuff works fine, you know.
What kernel do you know as of?
2.6.2.4, I think it was for this particular one. It's the newer ones. It's the 2250 and I think the 1850 that aren't in there yet. But I actually set it up in my main, you know, myth, or actually my secondary back-end front-end combo, which is, if you listen to the previous episode, I kind of reconfigured my whole environment. So I have a master back-end server with one capture card in it, and then I got now the front-end that sits in my entertainment center as a back-end as well. That has now, it's going to have three capture cards in it, because I'm going to, I have like a couple of the standard def boxes from RCN lying around, so I'm just going to throw my 150
might
card.
As well use them.
Yeah, throw my 150 card back in there, make sure that any of my other front-ends, because I do plan on building yet one more front-end to put up in our bedroom up on the second floor. So this one's going to go in my sunroom, the rest of the stuff is going to be in the entertainment center, and then the back end is just in a storage area in the basement. So
you're going hog wild.
Hell yeah!
Well, you need some new TVs.
Yeah, I know. I've been working on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. You know what I got for Christmas? I got cash from everybody.
So yeah.
I got some fun.
That's because you want to. You know,
I want to get a new TV.
Yeah.
So I got some money started in that direction. Yeah. So.
But one other thing too is I did get a 12-12 as well. So
you got so much.
Hey, yes, I know. I went all out here.
Family doesn't mess around, dude.
No, I give them the list and they just say okay, you know, whatever.
That's awesome. So you're set. So
I am. The 12-12 is awesome, by the way.
So is that going to become your new default capture?
Yeah, that's going to be the default one. Yeah. In the it's actually on my secondary back end front end, and that's where most of the recording is going to be done anyway.
Wasn't setting it up a complete snap. It was like
it was. Except, however, remember I told you I was running the 190 NVIDIA drivers?
Uh-huh.
Well, just before Christmas, an update got pushed down, and they started pushing in some of the 195 driver stuff, and it broke something or another. So I said, all right, I'm going to back this out. Unfortunately, when it backed it out, it also backed out all of Mythbuntu. You know what I mean?
It completely ripped it out.
Yeah, so I said, okay, let me re-add all this stuff back in. I got the FireWire stuff back up and running with the 185 driver, or so I thought, or whatever. It didn't seem to clean it out completely, no matter what I did to try to remove this stuff. When I actually hooked in the 1212, it would set up fine. Myth build database, you know, did all of its thing, and it filled it. Everything was in there. I could see in the database. I could see in the listings. Everything was there. I tried to go use it. It would never list. Really? It would never show up. So I said,
you barked up the system.
Yeah. So I basically said, screw it. I see now. I have everything on the back end, so the back end wasn't affected. So I just redid the whole secondary back end front end combo. Instead of setting up FireWire this time, I did set up just the PVR 1212. Everything was fine after that. Fine. Yep.
That's cool.
So it's working really, really nice.
Now, what are you doing to capture? You doing an IR blaster deal?
Yep. And I have honestly had not a single issue with
That's
good. So the IR blasting works really, really cool. Nice.
Mm-hmm. And you're liking the quality of it?
Yes. The quality is really nice.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the standard def recordings?
They work great. Most of the stuff that records standard def is like my kids' shows. You know, so when they, you know, when, you know, hey, Handy Manny comes on and he looks, you know, the show itself looks really, really nice. You know, and I've been checking the file sizes. They actually are recording in about, I don't know, like 700 megs or something like that. A half hour show, something like that.
I was doing like an hour and I was getting about 800, 850.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. And the quality, that 800 meg
maybe that was 500,
H.264 is like better than the 2 gig MPEG 2 from the PVR 150.
Right.
I think the quality is better and the file's smaller.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It looks better.
Yep.
You know, so I'm happy with the standard of stuff. And the HD stuff looks great.
Right.
So it's doing what it's supposed to. It's delivering.
I really like it.
I'm very happy that that's finally supported out of the box with Myth. And honestly, for people that are doing like satellite here in the States and in Canada too, that's pretty much your
only option.
That you can go with. Mm-hmm. It's going out with a component connection, which is, you know, technically an analog connection. So, you know, it works with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for people like, you know, that have digital cable or do over the air.
Right.
You can use QAM cards. And,
right.
And so what are you stop using? You're not doing FireWire recording anymore?
Not going to do the FireWire anymore. With the last release, the FireWire has just gotten so flaky for me. I was getting off of it completely.
Right. So. You'll be happier, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you don't have to worry about channels being encrypted and whatnot.
Right,
with the PVR 12.
Yeah, and honestly, once RCN did their cutover, I didn't have that issue anymore. I mean, I could still get like things like HBO. I think really the only thing I couldn't get was like the on-demand stuff, if I wanted to do any of the on-demand stuff. And now I haven't tried it yet, but I assume that I would be able to, since it's just a component out that's taking
place.
Yeah,
it should be able to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could set up maybe like a dummy channel or something.
Yeah.
And manually put the title in there. You can do that when you want to do a recording.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything with like pay-per-view type stuff, or like if you get a sports package kind of deal.
Yeah.
Same deal.
I mean, the nice thing though about the 12-12 is that it's got a pass through. So if I don't want to run it through Myth, I could just swap over to the other to the pass through, put it on a separate input on my TV, and just run it that way.
You know, the only issue with the pass through is the box has to be turned on, has to be powered and in the on position.
Mine stays on. It stays on all the time. Yeah,
and I've been running it since since.
What, 9.10 came out? 9.10
came out, you know, so it's been running for a while now, a couple months. I've had zero issues with it. The box that I have, I didn't buy it new myself. I got it secondhand from somebody, and it was an early one of the early models that came out. And some of the earlier models, they had issues where the boxes were overheating, and they actually had to send it back to a Hotbox to get a replacement box.
Oh, really?
But supposedly the early ones, but I haven't had any issues whatsoever with it. I lucked out.
What were some of the symptoms if it was overheating? Does it shut down or did it just lock up? Okay.
It would lock up on you hard. It would become unresponsive.
Okay. All right.
So you would have to power it down and
yeah, I haven't seen anything like that.
I had zero problems with it. I've been happy and I think it's great. And there hasn't been any sales of it since that one so many months ago, last summer.
Yeah, I haven't seen any.
Dell was the one who had it offered on sale, and I haven't seen anybody else selling it. You know, so as soon as
I imagine it's not a very popular product with like the FCC or
I don't think they care.
I don't know. They're trying at least the media companies are trying to get rid of all the analog connections.
I know. You know, this goes into what we've talked about.
Yeah.
There's an effort by the cable companies and the satellite. I don't know the satellite companies, but supposedly the content producers more so the studios. They want what's called a controllable, selectable output.
Yeah.
And basically, what this would do, it would be like a kill switch that the cable or the satellite company would have, where they would put it's basically a form of the broadcast flag, where they would put this flag in there, and the devices would recognize it and shut down outputting it over component connections or any other analog connection.
It's absurd.
It is absurd. Yeah. I hope it doesn't happen. People like the EFF, they're fighting this thing. So if you want to fight this, your best bet is to give a contribution to the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Right.
And those guys are on this stuff. If you go to the website, they have like alerts of issues that come up. And whenever anything mentioned or that comes up, they're on it.
Mm-hmm.
So and what's good about the EFF is they directly they talk to congressmen and senators and legislatures and they're not afraid and they go right at it.
Right.
You know, which is a good thing, because these studios have these, you know, ultra high priced lawyers. You know.
Yeah.
Who do we have? The
exactly.
People.
Right.
not much. You know, and you really think congressmen and senators have a full, you know, understanding?
No.
Of multimedia and DRM and
exactly.
whatnot? They don't know.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, people like the EFF support them, you know, and what's the one in the UK called? I forget. I interviewed the guy from them. It's the equivalent.
Oh, yeah,
of the EFF.
Yeah.
I forget.
I remember that show. I couldn't.
Yeah,
I forget
who it is.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Off the top of my head, I remember. I can look it up later. So that's that. So so you've been busy then.
I have. I've actually been messing around with somewhat better ways of figuring out like the open channels and cam and stuff like that. So I might put something out there then just to write up. Yeah, just a little something out there then.
That's cool. Yeah. A couple of other issues, some clarifications, corrections.
Yeah.
In some of the episodes, we talked about the new Myth UI interface. You know, with 0.22.
Yeah.
That's not based on Qt. It's the completely own thing that they wrote themselves.
Right. Yeah.
So you know. Dan here, you were in the IRC.
I was in the IRC, and they were saying, hey.
They flamed her ass.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're
but
like,
I told, hey, you know.
First off,
if anybody, you know, hears anything that we're saying wrong or whatever,
absolutely.
Let us know. Send us an email, because we were going along. We had the whole, you know, impression that it was based on Qt, and it's not. And apparently you can extend it with Qt. That's what something they were saying something about that in there as well. But I mean, I'm a programmer, but I've never actually gotten into any Qt programming.
I haven't done any multimedia with Qt. I've done simple GUI applications accessing like a database or something.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, mostly with Python, PyQt, and it's a great widget set. It's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. Q4 is great.
But yeah, it is. MythUI is its own thing.
It's its own thing, and that they wrote themselves completely.
So thanks to you guys. I don't recall your tags off the top of my head because it was a few weeks ago. But you know, thanks a lot for
hear the backpedaling going.
Thanks for pointing that out to me.
And a couple other clarifications, mostly with the HD Home Run.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we talked about when we were doing the preview for 022, MythTV 022, was they had in the wiki, they were mentioning multi-rec.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the HD Home Run is a dual tuner device, dual QAM tuner. Now, they said multi-rec supported now. Now, you would think that multi-rec is each tuner, you know, recording at the same time. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case. That's been supported since the very beginning.
Right.
When it was first supported in MIT. So that wasn't what multi-rec was. What multi-rec was if you have your channels and, you know, right now with digital TV, with the way the channel frequencies work, is you might have a channel with, say, like a designation of 122. Mm-hmm. And then you might have a whole grouping of sub-channels within that 122 channeling. So what multi-rec is, if you have a recording going on one of these main groupings, say you have one recording going on 122-1 or whatever, and then there's another show on 122-5 that you're able to record off of, with multi-rec, you'd be able to use one tuner to record both channels mm-hmm. at the same time. So conceivably, if you had shows that you wanted to record that were on the same main frequency, you would be able to record four shows with two tuners at the same time.
Right.
Now, I haven't tried this, okay? I don't even know the channels that we get on RCN mm-hmm. in our area. If they're grouped together, they may not be.
They are. That's part of what I was...
So it is doable then.
Mm-hmm. But the ones that I saw that were kind of grouped together seem to be like the PBSs, FMZ and WLVT.
The crappy channels that nobody cares about.
Yeah, they're the public channels.
Yeah,
you know,
local stations.
Yeah, most of the other ones appeared to have, I think for the most part, have separate ones, and I wasn't going to bring it along for you tonight, but I got running late there. But I have a channels.conf file for RCN for this area that has basically standard def and high definition of like all of like the network channels and the public channels that are available.
Whatever's open.
Yeah, so I've been messing around with some scanning. There's some scripts out there on the site, you know, but I still don't have it quite the way that I want. But it actually made, you know, going through and identifying the channels after the fact much more simpler than trying to just tune them in and see, because you got to go in and edit all the channel information then after the fact. This made that a bit simpler.
That's good.
So, yeah.
You know, one of the things, you know, about setting up QAM, it's a pain in the butt. You mm-hmm. scan it, you know, then you got to go into, MythWeb and resolve mm-hmm. it. And it's a bit of a pain. I CC'd you on an email that we got from somebody who was having issues with that. And I don't think he even knew about the podcast.
Yeah.
He was just like, he found some of my blog entries mm-hmm. on the internet. Mm-hmm. He did a Google search and he just found it. And I mentioned it to him and he mm-hmm. said it was helpful. Well, one of the screencasts that we did was the QAM setups.
Right.
And just seeing that in MythWeb and going into the tables and, mm-hmm. and checking off the XML ID field and then the channel mm-hmm. field. That, you know, actually seeing it makes a lot of a difference.
Yeah.
You know, you can explain it to somebody and they might not get it until they actually see it.
Right.
So that's a little confusing the first time that you do it. But once you do it, it's you pretty much know what you're doing.
Yeah. That. Right.
Now, another thing with the HD Home Run, a feature that I wasn't aware of, was that the HD Home Run has an IR receiver. Okay. So what that means is you can use, if you put the HD Home Run next to your TV, mm-hmm. you can use that as an IR receiver for your remote.
Oh, nice.
Okay, but it gets better.
Yeah.
Besides having the IR receiver, HD Home Run has a feature where you can use an instance of LARC over your network to connect to your MythBox and actually change the channels over the network.
Really?
You know, the two main methods that we know of is IR blasting mm-hmm. and FireWire.
Yeah.
So this is a third method.
Yeah.
So basically, you have your HD Home Run hooked into your network, sitting next to your TV. Mm-hmm. You got your remote. It receives the remote signals. Okay, when it does the channel changing, it can, over the network, via an LIRC instance, mm-hmm. change the channels for your recordings. I haven't done it, but I've read about it.
So it reads the code, and then what, does like a telnet?
I don't think it's a telnet.
Telnet to the port? Like there's the ports in Myth setup that you can specify.
I don't know the fine details because I haven't done it yet.
But okay.
Apparently it supports it.
Which, I mean, I could see that being, you know, something like that being. I mean, I was using the telnet port with the the N800, you know, with the little remote interface that somebody built, you know, for that. And that
Android has a similar app that does the same thing.
Right. You just expose the telnet port and make sure that it's active, and then you can just send the commands. Yeah.
It's probably the same exact thing.
Right.
So it's good to know. So if you have an HD home run, you won't need a receiver or a
platform. Right, yeah.
You may just be able to use that.
Sure.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I guess, you know, we talked about what we wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. Tonight, we're going to do listener call-in episode. Now, the listeners aren't calling us. We're going to call them to sort of simple fact that we're using the Linux Link Tech Show Asterisk Box. Special thanks to Dan Washko. The box wasn't up all day. There was an issue with it. He wasn't around, but I did get a hold of Dan Washko, and he brought the box back up, and it's working now. So I have some listeners that we're going to give a call to, and we'll talk to them in a sec here.
This is Jeremy.
Jeremy, how you doing? It's Pat DeVilla and Dan Freud for the MidTV Cast.
Hey, how you doing, Pat?
Excellent, man. How's everything?
Good.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you guys. You're not recording right now, are you?
Yes,
yeah, we are.
You're first up on the queue.
Awesome. I love you guys' show. You guys really helped me out.
I appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Thanks.
Glad we can help you.
Cool.
So, So what do you think, man? Do you have any issues, or you just want to chit-chat about something?
Yeah, let me take a look here. I know I want to make sure I talk about what I had on my agenda here.
So what kind of setup do you got, Jeremy?
Sorry. I have a Mithubuntu setup I'm running right now. One of my questions that doesn't really make sense to me is, what would I use transcoding for? Because I record some HD content and then just standard definition content. And if I transcode it, it just seems to double the size of the file. It doesn't really make sense to me.
Do you archive at all?
No.
Okay.
No, I just usually watch the shows and then delete them.
And then delete them. You probably don't need to even set up the transcoder then.
Okay.
What it's really there for is if you wanted to, say, automatically flag the commercials and then go in and strip out the commercials and do all that in, like, one fell swoop there. But I typically do it if I archive a show. Like, I know there's one particular show that I record and then put a bunch of them on a disc for a friend of mine because he doesn't have cable, but he has, you know, a DVD player. I will transcode the file to strip out and clean up the stream, the video stream, and then it'll write them right to the DVD. And I just hand him a DVD then with all the shows on it.
All right. Well, that makes more sense. I thought for some reason you just wanted to take the file and make it smaller for more storage, but I don't store them, so I don't need to worry
some
about it.
Some people do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And the other thing, on a Mithubuntu setup, how do I keep up to date with the latest Mithubuntu patches? I don't really care about updating the rest of this operating system. I just want to keep Mithubuntu or the MythTV part of it up to date. And I know that in the control center, you can enable like repositories. Is that the way to do it? And then just do a regular update, or is there something else I should be doing?
It's not popping up for you automatically and telling you that you have new updates that need to be installed.
It does once I mean. With a regular Ubuntu, it pops up, you know, weekly. You can set it for,
right.
But then you get all of the updates for the entire operating system.
Right.
But I don't know if I need that. I just need really MythTV updated because that's all this machine does.
Well, so, I know what the extra repos in Control Center, I think, are for nightly builds.
Yeah.
And that stuff is unstable. Okay. You know, some people say that it runs okay, but you definitely run the risk of, you know, some new code getting in there that's not, you know, 100% there and break something.
Yeah.
So I would recommend not enabling those repos in there. If you're happy, like, for instance, you know, I tell people, you know, if you got a MIT setup and it works for you and you're happy with it and a new version comes out every 6 months, don't upgrade unless there's a feature that you need supported.
Right.
You know, I went with a fresh install of 9.10 with Myth 22 because I wanted to get the PVR 1212 supported and I wanted the VDPAU stuff working out of the box. Okay, so that was very important to me. But if you're just doing standard F recording and you got a box that's been running okay for the last 6 months or a year and there's nothing really that you need, I'd say leave it.
Right. Now there was a switch. I was gonna say there was a switch over if you were running previous to, you know, prior to 9.10, you did need to upgrade everything because the database did change enough that any like say 9.04 or earlier wouldn't work with it. So if you have multiple machines,
I did have 8.10 running, but then I wiped a new drive and went with 9, the newest version, to get VDPAU working. And other than that, it seems to be up. But I just didn't know if I needed to keep updating it. But I'll turn off the repositories then if it's not really needed.
Well, I think that anything that's going to be updating is most likely going to be like security updates for the underlying OS. I don't know that they're going to be pushing anything new down. And likewise, if you're not running like a full desktop, like a full, you know, GNOME desktop or, you know, right, Kubuntu desktop, I don't think that any of that stuff is going to it's more or less keeping the operating system, you know, current and up and running so that when you would eventually say upgrade, you know, to a new version or whatever. I don't think that they're going to be pushing anything down that's not necessarily somewhat directly related to Myth TV itself.
Okay, that's what I wasn't sure about.
I mean, there's going to be
that answers my question.
Yeah, there's going to be some other I'm trying to think if there's anything that I've ever seen come down the way that would have been not, you know, maybe integral to the you know, Myth TV running on, you know, Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Can you think of anything?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Not really off the top of my head.
Yeah.
No, I just, when a new version comes out, I usually just wipe and start over and do with a new version,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to get it clean. Because it seems like when I let that Mythbuntu run for, you know, a good year or so, it's messing up by the end of that year.
Yeah.
It seems to be easier just to start over.
Yeah, back up the database if you want or not, and just do a clean install.
Right.
Plus, you know, when there's a new upgrade, it's an opportunity to upgrade your system. Go get a new hard drive.
Sure, yeah.
You know, put a little more memory in there.
Yep.
Exactly. All right, thank you guys so much for your help.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it, right?
I love the show. If you guys ever do like a show topic, could you guys throw out a Myth export kind of tutorial? I don't really understand what it's doing or how it works. I have it set up, but I don't know how to go from here.
That would be
in the future.
Yeah, and actually, we're working on getting. I've been in contact with the creator of the Myth export scripts and whatnot. So we're working to get him on.
Yeah,
actually,
maybe we can get him on and just talk to him directly.
Yep.
All right. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Have a good night.
Have a good evening.
See you.
Bye.
Hello.
Kevin, how you doing? This is Pat DeVille and Dan Fry.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent, excellent. We're recording, so don't curse.
Oh, no prep, huh?
No prep. So how's it going?
Good, how are you guys?
We're excellent.
Pretty good.
So you're the second caller on the list here, and we're wondering if you have, do you have any topics that you want to talk about, or do you have any questions?
No, I just thought maybe this. What do you guys, I guess, just pick up on anything you guys were discussing?
Well, let me ask you, are you running Myth? Like, do you have a setup working for you?
Yes, I have. Well, in fact, I've been running Myth for about a little over a year now. In fact, I contacted you, I think, after hearing one of your Myth episodes on the Linux Link Tech Show that you used to have. Got interested in it and started doing my research, emailed you for some tips and how-tos and such, and you sent me one of your articles you wrote and everything.
Right. Well, let me ask you, are you doing just standard F, or what's your setup like? Is it just a standard F, or are you doing HD?
Right now I have a Comcast cable. I'm about 50 miles north of Indianapolis, north central Indiana. Got Comcast cable. On my main front end, back end system, in my main family room, I'm bringing in the Comcast cable to it, and I'm not using one of their set-top boxes. I'm just bringing it straight in and capturing the analog and the high def, the clear QAM I can get.
So you're doing both then?
Yes. And then on my secondary back end, I have out in my garage, it is connected to a Philips UHF, VHF antennas up in my attic, so I'm capturing over-the-air high def on it, and then the second, you know, it feeds into the secondary back end, and then that feeds the main back end in my living room over the network.
So it sounds like you got a pretty nice setup. So you're capturing open QAM stations from your cable provider, and then you're also doing HD over-the-air channels.
Correct.
And you said analog too, right?
Oh, pardon?
You said analog as well, right?
Correct. Yes, I'm getting the.
They haven't cut your analog feed yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
The clock is ticking.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Kevin. Like, do they have a lot of stations open, unencrypted, or is it just the over the air stuff?
I get you know all the standard, you know, the ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox. There's a couple of PBS stations that are, and I mean, you know, maybe 12 free open, you know, clear stations off the cable. I get more off the antenna than I do from the cable.
What are you capturing for the over-the-air stuff? What are you using?
I'm using just a Philips UHF antenna. It's like the old antenna I used to have when you were a kid, you know, the big old fold-out
right.
aluminum.
Right, and what kind of capture device?
I've got two cards in it, in my secondary back end, a K-World hybrid. It's a hybrid tuner card. It's got the analog and digital, but, you know, it's not a true dual tuner because it can't do both at the same time. It's either one or the other. And then I have an ATI, one of the older ATI Anywhere, Old Wonder Anywhere.
Yeah, that was a popular card for a long time. A lot of people use those.
So I've got two, like I said, I've got split my feed from the antenna into two, so I can capture two. Concurrent, I can capture two over-the-air stations at the same time and record. And then in my main master back end, front end, the master end, master back end front end system, it's on the TV, which is also my sensor file at home. A UK World thing, the same one, and two of those. A hop pod, the 1118.
So it sounds like you got a pretty involved setup. You got over-the-air stuff.
Yeah,
you got cable.
I'm capturing, you know, I'm recording quite a bit of TV.
let me ask you, how does the quality over-the-air HD compare to the cable stuff?
All over-the-air. I'm about, according to TV school, about my farthest broadcast station, about 42 miles away.
That's not too bad, then.
No.
You should get a lot, then.
Yeah, but well, we have no hills up here over here. I mean, that's pretty much the flat, slightly rolling.
Are the file sizes for the over-the-air stuff, are they much larger? I think I've heard that they could be considerably larger.
They're not that much larger than what I'm getting over the cable. They're a little bit because they're not, you know, compressed and
right.
as much. But I don't notice a big difference.
Right, for an hour of, say, over-the-air HD, how big are the files?
You're looking at about 6 to 7.
Oh, that's pretty comparable. Yeah, I was expecting them to be larger.
Bad at all.
What was your question again?
Have you had any issues, any small issues pop up since you've been running Myth at all?
Well, when I first started out a year ago, I was using Linux Mint version Mint 5, which was based off of Ubuntu Hardy. That's what I started out with. And there was an issue with the K-World tuners. I couldn't use two analog tuners. I could only use one, so I kind of struggled with that. That's why I kept adding more tuners to make up for the second analog tuner not being able to use. Well, that got fixed with Ubuntu 9.1. They finally got the drivers straightened out to where all my tuners are functioning correctly now. So that's really the only issue I've really had.
So you're watching a lot of TV now, I guess.
Yes. I mean, on any given... Let's see, I'll pull up my... I may have, like, you know, on a busy night, it may be have 6 or 8 programs being recorded.
Wow, you got me beat.
Wow, yeah.
I'm lucky if I do 2 or 3 a night.
Bulk of my time spent during the morning when all my kids' shows, you know, record, yeah.
And right now, everything's a little bit of a lull, the network shows,
because yeah,
they're
yeah.
all in break now.
Yeah, kind of waiting for some new...
Yeah, next week the Heroes is coming back in a few other shows. Yep. So.
Well, Heroes only been on for like 3 weeks, I think,
know,
and then the season's over. Yeah,
well, it's done. The show.
Yeah, it's all right. Chuck comes back then. That's a good show.
Yeah, the show's a comeback. Yeah, they canceled.
Yeah, in fact, I didn't watch the first season of Chuck. So
me either.
It's really funny. You would pick up a lot of it, and actually, there's you see some. He's actually, you know, the guy on it. He gets called out on Linux calls too. So
right, he's supposed to be like a Geek Squad kind of.
Yeah,
he works
yeah.
like one of these consumer electronics.
Yeah, right.
That look like Best Buy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like the Geek Squad guy, right?
Yep. And he gets called. You know, there's one. I remember one episode. There's the guys are saying, you know, he got called out on a Linux call, and their guy. There was a couple Mac guys working there too, and they're like, we're artists, we're Mac guys, they're going, you know. So I'm like, all right, yeah, whatever.
That's funny. At least they make the joke.
Yeah, yeah,
that's good. At least they'll support the call.
Exactly,
like the real
yeah.
Geek Squad.
I happen to be browsing the channels the other night and seeing that the new season was going, you know, kicking off here in the next week or two, and then I seen they were on the Sci-Fi channel were replaying last year, so I got that set up.
Oh
cool. Nice.
When is that starting, tonight?
No, next Thursday.
All right. Good to know.
Yeah.
Thursday to 7th on Sci-Fi, they're replaying the whole first season.
So I'll have to record the whole deal.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've seen an episode here and an episode there, and it looked decent. So I think I'm going to pick up on that. You know, the last time Sci-Fi Channel, I did that with a show was with Lost.
Mm-hmm.
The Sci-Fi Channel, they replayed, like, the first three seasons of it. And what they did was they, like, stopped halfway, you know, in the middle of the third season, and they stopped showing the episodes. So then, you know, the fourth season started up on ABC, so, you know, there was a gap in between there.
Yeah.
And you were pretty much, it was like, what happened? So I hope they don't do the same thing with Chuck on the Sci-Fi replay. But thanks for the tip. So if you want to catch up with Chuck, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, what about front ends? I assume you have an HDTV because you're recording HD stuff, right?
I just have the one master front end on that's on the same, you know, the master back end system. It's feeding the one. I got a Mitsubishi old rear projection big screen TV. I think it's a 48-inch.
Well, those actually are decent.
Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah, and it was one of the, when the first TV we had went out, we had a Zenith big screen before that, but when we bought this Mitsubishi, it was like at the very beginning of the high def, and this one was advertised as being high def ready. Well, it has the three, you know, component high def jacks on the back, and that's about it.
So no HDMI. But does it have
no,
a VGA?
No HDMI, no VGA, no DVI. So what I've got coming out of my NVIDIA 8600 card is a converter. It's coming out of a TV out port that goes into just a standard one component, the gold component cable.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, feeding my video. And then I've got a digital... digital coax feeding my home amp. But, you know, like I say, I don't know what the actual true resolution of that TV is because reading in the manual and everything, but I can watch all my HD stuff just fine on it.
And it gets detected and everything, so. You have any issues with the XOR config?
Well, it doesn't detect the screen perfectly, but with this latest NVIDIA driver, the 190 series, it has some overscan adjustment in there,
mm-hmm.
and that really worked out nice. So that was an issue I had before the latest this round, you know, the upgrades. The previous NVIDIA drivers didn't have any nice way to adjust any overscan, so my desktop was actually bigger than the screen, so I had to kind of fudge, you know, guess where the menus were.
Right.
So let me ask you, for the 190s, how did you upgrade to the newer version of the driver? Did you go through a repo?
I just manually downloaded and installed it.
A lot of people have said that and haven't had any issues doing that.
No, the issue that I had was with I used the PPA for it, and that's when some of the stuff got kind of started breaking. Although I think if you switch over to Mythbuntu.
I tried doing the. I was reading in the ABS forums about adding the NVIDIA, about VDPAU, PPAs, mm-hmm. and everything. I had some issues with that too. So
yeah.
I take them out.
Yeah. Anytime you go off the beaten path, you know, and start using different repos for like special packages and stuff. You know, you run the risk down the road of, you know, stuff, you know, mm-hmm. breaking because of dependencies and whatnot. You know, the last version of Mythbuntu that I was running, I was using the Avanade repos, and it worked pretty well for that. And I wound up upgrading it, and it just became such a mess. I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do a clean install.
Mm-hmm.
And once I did that, it seemed to clear up any little issues.
Right.
Sometimes you got to do that, you know. And plus, you know, all the newer features, they're all supported now out of the box, so... You know, what Avanade did was great. He backported all the VDPAU stuff to 0.21, which mm-hmm. the Myth dev said they weren't going to do.
Right.
So, you know, it was worth to do for a while. You know, but now that everything's kind of in the main line, mm-hmm. You don't need to really do that anymore.
Right. I think if you would, for some reason, you know, want to try out like the Mythbuntu testing repos or whatever, I believe it's in there already as well.
Really?
But I don't think that it's not going to make it down till at least the next release or whatever. Because I could use it. I need that. I could fix some of that overscan stuff on my TV as well.
Yeah, I know that the Kevin was saying with the mm-hmm. newer version of the drive, it has that overscan feature. So I could have sworn they were saying that that overscan feature wasn't saving every time you exited. It would like it would reset.
Oh, really?
No, it does. Every time it won't stick. Every time you reboot, you have to start the NVIDIA server application, and then it pops right back, and then you hit quit, and it, you know, it pops right back to where you saved the setting there, but it won't actually write it to where it, you know, makes it permanent.
Is this something you can write to XWord?
It's probably a permissions issue.
Is it something you can write to XWord?
I even started it with root, you know, started the NVIDIA settings program as root, and even selected, you know, write to XWord or whatever, and
I've run into that as well. You actually have to start up like the NVIDIA settings, and then from like another window, just another terminal, you have to delete the XORG or move the XORG to the XORG .conf whatever, XORG to a new file, then edit a new one. With when you go to save it, it's not going to find one there, and it gives you a chance to preview your changes. Just, you know, Control A insert in VI and Control Shift V, something like that, you know, and it puts it all in there. So
I'll have to give that a try.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, that, I mean, at least you got to work it, you know.
Rarely have to reboot, so it's not that big a deal. But.
Yeah. I find like my backend system down here, I kind of like leave that on all the time.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
You know,
mine runs 24/7.
Yeah. I think a lot of people tend to do that. So we're not being green. Oh,
well. Although I don't know. We might have to switch that now that, you know, it's the first, after the first year, what PPNL decided they're going to increase 30%, something like
that's,
that.
That's our local power
company. Our local power company, yeah. Our power's going up 30%, so.
Yeah, well, it's been deregulated in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So do you have any questions or anything else, Kevin, before we jump off with you?
Well, no. Something I've been messing around with lately is archiving some shows off and trying to automate that with some scripts and stuff. I think I've found a site that where I can log into MythWeb and actually, when you go to your recorded shows and through the MythWeb, you can, and then it has a button in the Myth menu system also, but I've got it set up to where I can just click on a button and either.
Oh, user job, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it automatically, you know, recognize the cut list and.
What script are you using? Did you write something yourself, or you pulled somebody else's?
I found it. I'll have to send you guys a link.
Yeah, please do. So we'll put it in the show notes.
The guy that kind of has a nice site on some Myth TV setup stuff. It's not really out in the mainstream Myth TV stuff. I just happened to stumble across it somehow when I was doing a search for automated scripts.
So what formats does it go to? What resolution?
Xvid.
See, I like Xvid a lot. Mm-hmm. I like Xvid.
It'll take the 6-point, you know, the high def capture, an hour program, a 6.8 gigabyte show, and it'll compress it down to like 500 megabytes.
So that's nice if you want to archive it.
Yeah.
And he said it recognizes the cut list.
And it's still in the playback. It's still good at 500. You know, at the reduced quality. I mean, it's still very good.
Yeah, I've been using in the past. I used NUV export a lot, and I would go to Xvid also. Mm-hmm. And I would lower the resolution. I'd bring down the frame rate a little bit and then the bit rate of the video. And the quality is good. Like, I have some old episodes. It's still watchable, you know. The files, I was getting them down to like 700 meg or so.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality was pretty good. So if you want to archive stuff, that's a way to do it.
The site I'm referring to, it uses a NUV export as a, you know, transcoder.
Okay, so it is NUV export. So he's just automating it a little bit.
Oh, yeah, NUV export, yeah.
That's good. Yeah, NUV export's great. Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm just real happy with the latest release of Myth. It seems like the commercial detection has gotten much better.
Mm-hmm.
You guys noticed that?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's gotten a little better, definitely. I'm happy about the interface. I think the interface is much nicer.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Interface is very, very nice.
So it looks like it's, you know, it's progressing along, and I'm glad they're making progress. I noticed on the Myth users mailing list that some of the devs who do Myth music, you know, they're definitely going to do a rewrite for the next release, which I'm very happy about.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of that traffic flying through there,
and it's good that
the only thing I find lacking.
Yeah, Myth music, I agree. Mm-hmm. You try something like XBMC or Boxy. And the music players that they have are like so much better than the one that Myth has. But I'm glad the devs, you know, they're looking for input from users, and they're asking people what they want and what are some of the features. So you know, it's good that they're addressing it, and I'm sure if it's anywhere as good as like the Myth web interface, you know, the web browser that's in there, mm-hmm. that got rewritten for this release, and it's definitely a lot better now. It's actually pretty usable now. Mm-hmm. So if they do something similar with Myth Music, I'll be happy. All right, Kevin. Yeah, well, any last words?
I have XDMC loaded for that reason.
Oh, really? Yeah. Just for music?
Their music interface.
Yeah, it's beautiful. They have a nice interface. Mm-hmm. They do nice work, those guys. So I'm sure we'll talk about XBMC in the future in detail a little bit more. I've played around with it a little bit, and it's a real nice application if you just want like a media front end. You know, mm-hmm. you don't want to do any recording.
Right.
You know, but we like to record, so.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, thanks for talking to us. We appreciate it. And, you know, if you have any comments or questions, you know, let us know, and definitely shoot us that link for that script. You know, we'll put it on there, on the show notes.
I'll do that, and thanks for providing a great show on the as far as the Linux Mike Tech show. As far as that got me interested in MSTV, and then I'm just happy and lark when you guys started this podcast.
Cool. Well, thanks for talking to you. It's been nice, man.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good one, right?
You too.
Take care.
Hello.
This is Pat and Dan from the Myth TV Cast.
How are things at the Myth TV Cast?
Excellent. You know, I don't think I ever got your name.
I don't often give it out.
Okay.
I have some employers who I don't like snooping on me.
Okay, that's cool. So we mentioned your website at all or no?
Yeah, you can just call me Guru.
Okay, we'll call you the Guru, and we can mention your website then, right?
You're welcome to.
Okay, so this is...
I just don't like to give it out in case they're watching.
That's cool, man. I can understand. Some people are very, you know, they're very protective of their identity and whatnot.
And I'm not even in a tech field.
Okay.
So I don't want them involved.
I understand. So we got the Guru from Gadget Wisdom website, which is a really cool website. You talk about multimedia stuff, especially stuff like Myth TV and some other topics. Mm-hmm. So welcome to the show. We're doing some call-ins with some of our listeners. And we've communicated via what, Twitter, Danica, email. I know I have with you.
Yes. Yeah, I have with you as well.
Yeah. So it's
when I try to have something interesting to say. At
least. So it's nice talking to you.
Oh, well, likewise.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
So you run Myth TV, I assume, right?
I can't hear you.
You're running Myth TV, right?
Exclusively.
Ah, cool.
Nice.
So what's your setup like?
Well, I have a master backend, which is also doubling as a file server, and two front ends at the moment.
Cool. And what are you doing? You capture over the air, cable, satellite?
A combination of over the air and cable. I was originally running a FireWire connection to the cable box, but then the cable company decided they didn't like that. So
Time
I'm
Warner.
Using Hawpog HD PVR.
Nice. All of us are now. Using the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So they even somehow got channel changing away from me, too.
Yeah, it's not working for you anymore?
Unfortunately, and it was one of the things that got me into Myth TV. Originally, I didn't want to use an IR blaster, so when I could finally get FireWire working, I started using Myth TV exclusively.
Right. So were you ever a TiVo user?
I was never a TiVo user. I went directly from cable boxes and computer monitors without real televisions to cable boxes, a computer, and a copy of Myth TV.
Cool. Now, I've read some of your posts. You mentioned that you were an Apple user for a while, right?
No, I actually avoid Apple.
Okay, so it must have been somebody else writing on your website then.
No, I sort of prefer sticking with... I get some flack because I stay on the Fedora side of things over Ubuntu as my distribution, but other than that...
What do you get flack for that?
I don't know. There are too many people using Ubuntu, I think, and not enough people using Fedora.
I've used both, and I ran like Debian for a long time, so, you know, Ubuntu's pretty
well,
much
I grew
Debian.
Up with Red Hat. I've been with Red Hat since
there you go.
Version mm-hmm. 6.
Yeah. You know, the very first Linux I ran was Red Hat.
Yeah.
You know, version 5, you know, back in the day. And I ran it for a few years, and, you know, I play around with Fedora once in a while. It's quality stuff. You know, Jared Wilson, you know, he wrote the very first how-to for Myth TV on Fedora, and that was a great document.
Fedora mythology.
Yeah, yep. Excellent mm-hmm. document that he wrote. And I've talked to Jared a few times. And
I still go back to it every now and then just to look at any tips or whatever that he has out there and stuff.
He saved a lot of people a mm-hmm. lot of grief, man. Yep. I mean, even back then.
Well, once he switched over and the Mythdora came out, he stopped really updating it, but it's not needed as much.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because now you got, you know, three, you know, Myth-specific distros.
Right.
They work, all work pretty well, you know. They have their little...
But I started configuring it myself, and I still do it that way. I've probably reinstalled it so many times because I update my boxes every time there's a new distribution of Fedora that I can do it in record time by now.
So how long does it take you to do the compiles?
Well, I've been doing based on packages.
Okay.
Every so often I do compiling, but I figure if somebody else does the packaging, it makes my life a little easier.
Definitely. You know, I got two little kids, man, so any little extra time is...
Right, yeah.
Is, you take it where you can, you know? Plus, you know,
just recently I got my back end up to Fedora 12, and I did instead of doing a full restore of the database, for the first time in a while, I did a partial restore and got rid of a whole bunch of junk in there.
There you go. Your opportunity to clean stuff out of there.
Well, they recommend, if you look at most people who wrote the wiki, that you should always do the full restore. But for some reason, it runs much more reliably once I dumped out half the configuration settings that had been lingering for two different versions.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So what are you using for front ends? You have like a combined system, right?
No, I'm actually using a distributed system.
So you have all your front ends?
I have two dedicated front ends, which are mostly built with parts that I've discarded from the back end.
Okay.
So every new back end part means I have another piece to put into a front end.
So how many front ends do you have? Two?
I have two. I have one in one room and one in the other room.
Gotcha. And what are you doing in the HD, standard F? What?
I'm actually trying to get as much HD as possible. Fortunately, I'm in New York City, and Time Warner has been very kind with high definition.
Yeah.
So they're mm-hmm. coming in a couple weeks. They're doing Comedy Central HD is coming on. And
nice.
I forget which other ones are. I think MTV in high definition, and at least two more. But
that's
they've
good.
Gotten some channels that nowhere else has. BBC America HD, I think, is exclusive to New York right now.
That's a nice. Mm. That's a good station. I watch that a lot. All the Doctor Who on there, Torchwood.
Yeah, I was watching that last night.
Yeah, so that's cool. Yeah, my folks are in New York, and they have Time Warner. And Time Warner actually is nice about them is that they don't charge you any extra for an HD cable box. And you know, a lot of the cable companies, they'll charge you an extra $8, $5, you know, whatever. For an HD box, you know, at least these guys, you know, they let you do a straight swap and they don't charge you anything
right.
extra.
I appreciate that. It's more the customer service, but that problem's pretty much with every cable company. You try to explain to them what you feel is a simple concept, and they don't seem to get it.
No, not till you go to like the third or fourth tier of
right, yeah.
They actually talk to somebody who knows what you're doing.
I haven't had the nerve to try to bother them about unencrypted stations at their own documentations that I should be able to get.
Right. So is there a lot open with them, or what would you say, 12?
What's
unencrypted?
What stations they offer?
Yeah, well, the
Well, they're offering
stuff.
All the local broadcasts. TBS HD just opened up. A few months ago, they closed off TNT HD, so I figure it balances out somewhere. But they're encrypting a whole bunch of PBS stations that they
really?
Add in.
That's odd.
I've been meaning to call them about it, and the only practical way in New York City to get them to do anything is to complain through the city's... regulatory commission, the Department of Information, Technology, and Telecommunication. I just feel guilty bringing in the government whenever I want the cable company to do something.
Yeah, that's a little heavy-handed, but sometimes your hands are tied. It's the only way to go.
Well, there's another member of my household who's convinced that we'll get blacklisted by the cable company if I keep harassing them.
They know who you are. That's cool.
I'm certain they know who I am. I just would rather that they know a little less about me.
I hear you. So that's cool. So, you know, it sounds like you got an interesting setup. Now,
I'm very happy about it.
That's cool. So you like it. What do you think of the new interface?
I'm actually very happy about it. I wrote a bunch of things about adding in the fan art that they've started offering as an option, and they're supposed to get even better in 0.23.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, they got that little competition going. It gets people to submit different themes and whatnot.
Yeah.
So hopefully they get a handful of new ones out of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So.
I know I sent that information on that new plugin that Robert McNamara is working on.
Yeah, you can tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm excited because I've been trying to get web-based content into Myth TV for a long time. I started out with MythNet TV, which is a script that. Is not in the official package, and then moved over to Miro Bridge, which is now in the official package. But they're both scripts. This actually is a full-fledged plugin, which could integrate very nicely with the whole Myth TV interface.
Right. I played around with a little bit with the Miro plugin, and basically what it is you like create like a dummy channel, and then you have to have Miro Player running on your system. You do your subscriptions through there, And then you set up a cron job that runs the script, and what it'll do is it'll take your new video cast that you come mm-hmm. down through Miro, and it puts them into your recordings listings.
Mm-hmm.
So you go in there, you watch your web-based stuff, like if it was a new recording, and then after you watch it, then it gets archived to your Myth video. So it sounds like this plugin is somewhat similar in functionality to the Miro plugin, right?
Well, to some degree, but Miro Bridge is a script. It's not a plugin, and it's dependent on Miro itself.
Right, right.
This would bring the functionality directly into Myth TV. Not only would it allow you to browse, which you really can't do with the Miro, you have to run Miro, browse through it, find what you want, add it in, and then wait for things to come down.
Mm-hmm.
This would allow you to browse through, for example, YouTube archives.
That's cool.
Various feeds, and any site that you were able to write a script to interpret the data into the format that's going to be using.
So they're looking to do this in, what, 23, they were saying?
Well, they might be able to get it before then. They seem to be proceeding very far. I was looking. He actually sent me the notification that they put something on the wiki about it. So actually it's now a wiki page with more screenshots mm-hmm. than the ones that they originally put up, which were some video files.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just came through last night.
Oh, cool.
The nice thing about it is that it gets into some of the details. Their only problem right now is the first generation will allow browsing and launching. The next one they want to start integrating in with the recording menu. So anything you could download would go into the recording menu, and anything that you had to stream using a Flash player would launch Myth Browser.
Nice.
Well, that's pretty cool.
There are
a few things here that I want to ask them about, but I just got these details last night, so I haven't had a chance to write anything up.
Cool. I'll have to check out your blog.
I'll see if I can actually write the questions there so that it's easier for him to answer. But I'll probably go out over the mailing list.
Yeah, the mailing list is pretty good. The Myth TV users mailing list mm-hmm. is very good.
And they're soliciting updates for the design features of Myth Music.
Yeah, which is
the back end.
Really needs a rewrite.
Yeah.
It's getting a little old, Myth Music, and I'm glad they're soliciting feedback and suggestions from users. I don't know if they can come up with a nice interface. And you know, to me, with Myth Music, my problem is always with the playlists. I never really cared for how you go in and do the edits of the playlists and
mm-hmm.
how it's structured and everything. I thought it was a little counterintuitive to what you would think. I mean, you look at like what you know XBMC does or even Boxy with their music player, and then you go to the Myth Music, how it is currently, and mm-hmm. It's old.
Yeah.
And it needs.
I'm hoping they're going to do storage groups for it. That would just make the administration 10 times easier.
Oh, as soon as the storage groups came out, I was really hoping for that. I really, really adjusted to that nicely with the new version for the videos, and it would be great if they could do even with the images and everything. You know, your photos and all that stuff. Do it for everything. You know.
I'm predicting that they're probably just waiting until they do everything else with Myth Music in order to get it all working together.
Yeah.
Cool. So what are some of the other things that you cover on your website besides Myth for people?
Well, whatever I seem to be thinking of, I have a bunch of people who keep sending me things that I should be writing. So it's something of a team effort, but I end up doing a lot of the writing myself. And because of the fact that I have other things I have to do, I don't get as much out as I'd like to.
Yeah. That job and family thing get in the way sometimes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to schedule more than 24 hours in the day or 7 days in the week, but I'm working on it.
Yeah. If you figure out something you know you can do with that, let us know.
Yeah.
Well, I've been working on a stopwatch to stop time, but it hasn't quite worked out well.
It's like that movie. What was it? You remember that movie from like the 70s or the early 80s? I forget the name of it.
I think there have been a couple over the years.
Yeah. Well, the stopwatch, it stops time. And
yeah.
That could be good and bad. But anyway. So.
Just blink it shut like Hero. So.
Well, I could try driving my car up to 88 miles per hour, but I think it's too old for that.
Start smoking and everything. It's not good a thing.
It starts shaking around 70.
That's cool. So you've been a Linux user for a long time. You're saying you've been running for Fedora for a long time in Red Hat, yeah. Huh?
Well, I was running it simultaneously with Windows, and then I finally decided to get rid of Windows.
So you're all Linux, huh?
The only thing I still have that has a Windows partition is a netbook that I bought, and that's only for the rare program that won't run on anything else.
Yeah, I was actually I have a topic that we could talk about that as far as Windows applications. I'm not running Linux. You know, Netflix. I started up with Netflix again a few months ago, and I like the DVD service. I like what it is. It's really cool and everything. I have the Netflix plugin in Myth that you can, you know, browse your queues and whatnot and see, you know, the titles and everything. But
you can't stream it.
You can't stream it. It really pisses me off that they're doing that. I did actually, in VirtualBox, I had a Windows XP virtual machine, And I watched a movie in there, and it was pretty watchable.
Mm-hmm.
It worked pretty well.
Well, you can also try PlayOn. I've heard people have had good luck running PlayOn
though.
In VirtualBox and streaming it over.
The whole thing with PlayOn is you need a Windows machine running, and it basically you're running the Netflix stream on the machine on the Windows box, and then PlayOn pushes it out, right? It's like a
But I've heard people have had luck running that in a virtual machine,
right?
And then you get you could actually run it through the Linux interface.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a bit of a workaround. I just wish they had a native client for Linux. That would be nice.
Well, I've been following their attempts to port Silverlight over to Linux, the Moonlight plugin.
Right.
The problem is that they need the DRM that apparently Microsoft isn't giving them the information for.
Yep. Hmm. It's always back to the DRM.
Yep.
The irony is Microsoft agreed to work with Novell to produce the open source plugin in the first place. They're just not giving them the part that would make Netflix work.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Hopefully they come around to it and see, you know, there is a value of having a Linux client that works and that people will use. And they,
well, it's in line with his vision, you know what I mean? The guy, I forget what his name is, the president of it. He literally wants to have it wherever you can get it, you know what I mean? And if he's going to restrict a whole, you know, subset of people like this, you know.
Well, are they talking about doing, like, you know, like a mobile version?
No, they want you to be able to stream it wherever. I mean, that's why they're branched. That's what, when you were talking about getting a new TV, and you were talking about Netflix, I said, oh, well, you can check for it in the new TVs, because there's a handful of TVs that now do it as well.
The Blu-ray players also.
Yeah, right, yeah. So, but
the problem is a lot of those devices are running Linux.
Yeah.
The Roku player running Linux, and they made Netflix work on it, but they're using a closed source set of tools, which they could very easily say, fine, we don't trust you to have an open source Linux streaming device, but we'll give you this closed blob that will run on any Linux computer. We'll take care of it.
That's right. Basically what the Roku player is.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's also what Hulu recently did when they came out with their Hulu desktop for Linux. They came out with their own RPM. They're not releasing the source, but now technically if you want to, you could integrate Hulu into something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually very easy to set up a Myth. You know, you go to the Myth menus. It's basically just an XML file, okay? And you go in and you can create.
Yeah, I've done that myself.
It's really simple, and it works pretty well. And the new Hulu player has, you know, support for the remote. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you go in, you put the menu item in there, you go in and you watch Hulu. You get out and it goes back to Myth. It's pretty nice. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple. If they could do something like that with Netflix, I would be happy.
Yeah.
Oh, and obviously there's a potential for it. If NVIDIA can come with a closed sort of graphics driver, if Hulu can come out with a closed desktop program, why can't they? They just have to pay somebody to do it, which is probably what's preventing them. They don't see the mm-hmm. financial benefit.
Yeah, well, they got the Novell guys there. they have to do much. Just give them what they need to do, you know, see what to know what the heck they're doing.
Right.
The DRM piece, what's the interface, what's the API like?
Well, that's coming from Microsoft. So
I know.
Would have to put pressure on Microsoft to release something.
That should be too difficult, since the CEO of Netflix sits on the Microsoft board.
I don't think it would necessarily be too difficult, but everybody seems very reluctant to release things to Linux, which is why it takes so long to get any sort of Linux support for anything, unless somebody can easily reverse engineer it.
Yeah, I guess they're afraid they're going to get hacked.
They're more likely to get hacked if they don't.
Exactly.
Valid point. If you make it easy for people to do things without a hack, then they're going to not want to hack anything.
Yep. You know, they're trying to push, you know, their Silverlight technology and whatnot as, you know, as an alternative to Flash. You know, Flash sucks, man. It's a total resource hog. You know, you watch these little Flash videos, and you look at your CPU, and it's like throttled to like 70-80% for like a standard def video.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people might be open to an alternative if it happens to come from Microsoft. I mean, if they make it readily available to all the different platforms, then they should do it, you know? You would think they would want to get it into the hands of more people.
Well, I had high hopes for HTML5 and video streaming. I don't think anybody's really going to go in that direction, despite the fact it's here.
Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate, isn't it?
I'm still hoping.
It embeds in there. There's no resource hogging.
Yeah.
Yep. It's standardized.
Mm-hmm. And the codecs are open.
Yep.
Well, I think they've actually done it with closed codecs as well, because I know they've done some H.264 streaming, which is technically it. Not an open codec.
Yeah, I think this is the year that the licensing comes down on H.264, right? That everyone's going to now have to
producers.
Yeah, they're going to have to start paying for it.
I have no theoretical problem paying for a codec if I get full use of it.
Right.
I would pay to get Blu-ray support under Linux.
That's another sore spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to come eventually, you know, because right now the only way to do it, as far as I know, is you got to rip the Blu-ray. And then get the encryption ripped off the, and then play it back off the hard drive.
It's a process. It's like
a pain in the ass.
You also need like 30 gigs of storage space or something like that. You know, just
for one movie.
I tried my first Blu-ray rip just to see how it would work. So I bought one Blu-ray disc, and I did rip
Which disc was it?
It was actually Star Trek. It was on sale.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to find a second Blu-ray disc to see if it works well for other titles, but I haven't quite found anything that I really want to buy on Blu-ray.
But how long does that whole process take?
I used Make MKV, which has a beta Linux version, and it actually didn't take that long. I ran it on one of the systems.
Yeah.
It took less than an hour to get everything done.
Oh, really?
That's not bad.
I was expecting it to be longer.
Most of the time, you don't want to spend an hour.
Right.
Yeah. It shouldn't be like this, you know? You should just pop the disc in and it plays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you don't, but also you don't get menus, which is, I'm not sure I need a menu, but if it has any of those extra features that I might want, such as pop-in commentary or what have you, I wouldn't be able to take advantage of that. Standard audio track commentary, I could.
So what are you using for playback, M-Player or VLC?
I'm actually playing it back through Myth.
Really? Oh, cool.
I've tested it. It actually does stream through the storage group system. So I just moved the entire thing into the storage group.
You just need a big honking hard drive.
That's a lot of data.
I probably have close to 3 terabytes with if you combine all the hard drives I stuffed in.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot, but it's not. Not these days.
No.
You can buy a terabyte for like $80, you know?
Well, my problem is archiving for backup purposes. The old standard for exporting from MythTV was NuvExport, and it doesn't get very much love anymore.
Yeah, it's kind
of every time a new version of FFmpeg comes out, I have to hack the thing back together.
Yeah, you got to recompile everything, right?
Well, no, it's a script, so I just have to hack some of the expressions.
Right, the options, the flags, whatnot.
Yeah, and I know Chris Peterson, who originally came up with it, was saying that he wanted to just move that functionality directly into the Myth transcoder. Right now, you can't do lossless cutting of anything that came off of the HD PVR, and you can't encode into a variety of formats using transcode. It only gives you a limited subset. So if you're trying to archive down to, let's say, a standard file of, let's say, an hour of high-definition video at under a gigabyte, just for archival purposes, it's a pain in the neck to find a good option.
Right, rip out the commercials and maybe bring down the quality a little bit.
So I just edited several sections of NuvExport, and it still does work for the basic stuff.
You'll have
to
share.
New seems to
I hope you're sharing.
Well, usually, most of the problems come not because there's anything wrong with the script. The script is technically fine, but the script depends on Mencoder and FFmpeg, and they keep changing.
Right.
So every time there's a new version of them, I have to go in there and edit some of the lines so that the commands that it's calling are correct.
And that's particular.
I usually send that back up, but Chris Peterson, who is in charge of maintaining it for MythTV, since it's now part of the distribution, doesn't like to make any corrections to it very often. So the tickets will just stay open for long periods of time.
I actually had a ticket in Myth Music that I opened up right before the release of 22. And what it was you would go in and delete a playlist, it would basically crash the front end. And they actually fixed it. I'm impressed, even though it's going to be completely rewritten.
Well, I crash the front end regularly. There's still things that I know will crash the front end.
Such as?
Recently it was some of the VDPAU stuff, but once they released the final version of 22, a lot of those went away. I still had a few of them lingering where the whole system would white screen during playback, but when I wiped out all the configuration settings in the database and went back to an empty database, it actually went away.
Yeah, I never saw that.
Lingering in there from 21. So sometimes upgrading is not good.
Yeah.
It's only a useful lesson.
Yep. Sometimes a clean install is the best bet.
Yeah. I kept the data, so what shows I'd recorded, what shows I wanted to record, but I dumped all the configuration settings.
Yeah. Actually, other people have said the same exact thing. That's their experience, you know. Sometimes you have an older version that you've upgraded several times. You know, sometimes it's best to just do a clean install and get everything nice and fresh.
Which I wanted to edit on the upgrade page, because they say that there's no good reason to do a partial restore instead of a full restore. I really wanted to put the text there in case you have been running the thing for 2 or 3 years. You might want to consider it. It's a pain in the neck to go through and rescan all your channels, and I still have a public access station that thinks it's the Sundance channel. I have to get around to fixing that. Well, it happens to be on the same channel number as the Sundance channel for some reason.
Well, that's good stuff, man. It's nice talking to you.
Well, I'm always glad to share my opinion.
And,
I'm hoping that there's going to be something new coming out that I can complain about, at least.
I enjoy your website. I actually read it, and I recommend other people to check it out, Gadget Wisdom. com, right?
Yeah. I keep trying to write more, but sometimes I just need to be inspired. That's why I say complain. Usually I get very inspired to write about something that's bothering me.
I hear you. I totally know where you're coming from. That's how it is with doing blog posts. Sometimes, you talk about a topic that's in your mind, and you can rattle off 2, 3, 4 posts about it. Sometimes more.
Yeah, and sometimes something I'm very excited about I can't talk about. I went to, a few months ago, the GGGT New York meetup, where they had a bunch of vendors there, and I spent 3 days trying to figure out what to say about it. A room full of interesting technology, and I had absolutely nothing to say. I went to the Boxy meetup, and where they unveiled the Boxy beta.
Right, this few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think we were Twittering each other there, because I was on the way into New York, I think, right after, the day after it happened.
Yeah, I was standing there. They had it down at the Williamsburg Music Hall, and they're showing this off, and I keep going over every time to Avner Ronan and bothering him about the fact that the developers can't help out the people who keep trying to get it to work under Fedora, to the point at which he's already met me several times already with that question. If you ever watch the first Boxy New York meetup, you can hear me shouting that from the audience.
That's you.
Saying one of the questions.
You're the heckler.
Well, no, their contest was, what would you do for a Mac Mini during the original one? I came very close to singing show tunes. I would have ended up with a Mac, which sure, there's something I could do with it.
I hear they make nice doorstops.
Well, this time they were auctioning off a netbook.
That's nice.
I could think of many more things to do with an HP netbook, but I didn't win.
Well, you know, people definitely check out the Gadget Wisdom website. It's a nice site, and we'll definitely have to talk again in the future.
Okay, if there's ever anything, I'm always willing to put my 2 cents in.
Cool. Well, thanks for talking to us, and we'll talk again. Take care.
And I'll keep listening.
Have a good one.
Thanks. We'll see you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And that wraps up our listener call-in show.
Yeah, first one. Thought one pretty good.
Yeah, minus the one guy who got his voicemail. That's okay. It happens. Things pop up, and sometimes you're a little busy.
Yep.
So we'll definitely have to do another call-in episode again in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I think I want to start getting some interviews.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Some of the devs from the different distributions and projects and side projects and whatnot. We got some people lined up, waiting in the wings, and I think we're going to start doing some of those.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys have any suggestions of topics that we want to cover, definitely write to us.
Or if we screwed something up.
Yeah, correct us, please. we have a form. It's actually on the linuxlink.net, which is the tech show website.
There's a link off our website, though.
Yeah, if you go to midtvcast.com, you'll see the link for the form. You can go there and register. It's actually fairly active, and people post questions. And, if they want to do like a build or something and they're looking for advice, that's a good place to go. As well as, really good place is the MidTV users mailing list.
Mm-hmm. Even the IRC, too.
Yeah, the IRC is a good place to go.
Yeah, I've been in, into that one lately. I've been into the Mythbuntu IRC, and I've been hopping around a bunch of them for a while, because I was running into some issues there and needed to find some stuff out, and so the people were really helpful. So
yeah, that's good stuff, man. Mm-hmm. So everybody, thanks for listening to this episode, and we will talk to you soon. Take care.
See you.